It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, and here we go, off and running for this 24th day of April, 2019. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. I mean, you can find us other places, too, like RoseSociety.org for the stream, Roku devices, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, I think. Just all over the place. So, but if you go to headon.live, there's a bonus that comes with that because you can click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump in to the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Yay. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and if you jump in to the chat room this evening, early arrivers will be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Heather and Squeaky, and capably moderated by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Wednesdays, Sparky takes the night off from the religious psychobabble. And what a Wednesday night it looks like it's going to be. Brethren and sister and the little old blue-haired ladies, seeing as how we've had three rainless days, sent me out to fire up the bank of acorns there behind the Cathedral of Common Sense Fellowship Hall kitchen. And I worked up a roaring blaze of about 650 degrees Fahrenheit. It wasn't roaring blaze, it was more like in the way of coals. And then we set about making pizza crust. And the little old blue-haired ladies thought it would be a nice... I think they wanted the night off. But the fact of the matter is, we made cheese pizzas and meat pizzas and veggie pizzas and white pizzas and mushroom pizzas and... It was a buffet better than your Pizza Hut can ever offer. Mm-hmm. And it being the Cathedral of Common Sense, we didn't have no beer. And the fact of the matter is, I really don't trust the deacons with a keg. You understand? But there was some green salad and multiple dressings and things like that to go with it. And then, at the end, the little old blue-haired ladies in advance had made fried pies with dried peaches and dried apples and dried apricots, dried pineapple. And those things were fantastic. So it was kind of a crust and dough extravaganza all the way through. And, well, the deacons can put away some pizza, even if they don't have the beer to go with it. And so they did, and they wiped out the fried pies with a will, and then they trundled up their massive bulk up the couple of flights of stairs and wandered out to the parking lot where, yes, the sinners were waiting right there for them. As the deacons walked up and said, y'all got a light? I mean, you're going to hell anyway. And so they did. And so the faithful deacons and the sinners set to smoking their merry hearts out, because the deacons know that they got the night off too. That's why they laid into the pizza so hard. They knew they weren't going to be on their feet this evening because it's fundraising free radio week on the Horn. Mm-hmm. So they're not standing down here in front of me right now. In fact, they were downright surly when they were called to the service by the crackle of the cathedral's solar-powered cattle prod. And with a real insouciance, they didn't even rumble or stumble or bumble. They just sort of moseyed and malingered through the vestibule door and passed and cast a sort of disdainful glance at that bowl of desiccating butter mints, and it sashayed down the aisle and plumped their deacon butts right there in the chairs, because they knew they were not going to have to move, brethren and sisters. So with no offering taking place, we have no offertory hymn. But the fact of the matter is, it is still incumbent upon us to be praiseful and mindful, because even without an offertory hymn, I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Munificent Mullah, Bob Kincaid. And this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And we got a lot of faith in action stories to address. The first one I was made aware of by our dear friend Texas T. And sure, plenty of Trump stuff to talk about, but God Almighty, we've talked about a lot of Trump stuff. So let's take a break and wait, what's that? Thank you. Oh, a thank you coming in from Steve from New York. I really have to thank the Horn family for the outpouring of support and sympathy in my heavy grief over the passing of my little lady, my cat named Petey. It was truly devastating to put her to sleep yesterday and see how this once feisty 5-pound, 7-ounce, 8-year-old kitty was so frail in her final hours. I have continued to feel heartbroken and have learned from others who have had to put pets to sleep that the pain never goes away. Thanks, Horn family. I really appreciate it. Well, we're sorry you're going through it, Steve. When we bond with little critters, we find out, as often as not, more about ourselves than they reveal of themselves. And the fact that you were good and decent and kind in taking care of little Petey, well, she stuck around as long as she could because she recognized a good human being in you. Mm-hmm. So I hope you'll take some solace in that. Now, as far as heroic tales of faith in action, you remember the Duggar family? Particularly Josh Duggar, who had a thing for his sisters. Right. And of course he's since been forgiven by Jesus, if no one else. Well, possibly one of the reasons that Josh did what he did, a groping of his sisters and whatnot, is because that bizarre lot spends so much time absolutely hung up on the devil. And so in a desperate attempt to keep themselves in the public spotlight, some Duggars went on the Instagram to show themselves making what you and I would recognize as deviled eggs. In fact, in certain food porn portions of the program, I think it was in a conversation with Tracy at one point, talking about what you do with the rib bones that you cut off of your standing rib roast. Say you got a standing rib roast for Christmas dinner. Well, when it's done, you take that electric knife, because it's, and it's real accurate and easy to use, and you carve off the rib bones, and you set them aside. And what we always do with them here is we make what's called deviled rib bones. And in the 18th, 17th century, whatever, to devil something was to make it spicy and provide heat, you know, because hell is hot. And in the years before the Columbian Exchange, they didn't have access to things like botulicia, ghost peppers, or reapers, or habaneros, or nothing along those lines that had really set your mouth on fire. The only thing they really had was black pepper and mustard. So deviled rib bones is you take the rib bones and you paint them with a sort of a paste made of mustard powder and a little half and half, you know, a little cream. And I use a little curry powder and some black pepper. Because remember, curry, most of the stuff in curry powder is not part of the Columbian Exchange. And you run them under the broiler, and my oh my, they're good. Maybe we're talking about this because we were so informal down in the fellowship hall this evening. You know, just wood-fired pizza. But you and I, we know deviled eggs. And deviled eggs are deviled eggs because they have mustard powder in them that makes them kind of spicy and gives them a zip and a zing on the tongue. Oh, but not the Duggar family. Oh, no, brethren and sistren, no. No, the Duggar family is so hopelessly stupid that they don't understand why deviled eggs are called deviled eggs. And so the Duggar family says they are little yellow pocket angel eggs. Now, I don't know about you, but if I reach into my pockets and my pockets are empty, even when my pockets are empty, be it pants pocket or coat pocket, there's probably going to at least be a little bit of dryer lint down there. But apparently the Duggar family, I don't know, in anticipation of starvation or the visit of a visit from the angel of death or something like that, they make deviled eggs and they call them little yellow pocket angel eggs. I don't ever want to get around a member of the Duggar family, because the idea that one of them might forget that they got a deviled egg in their pocket and just be walking around with it for a while. No. One of the nice things about when you take the tray of deviled eggs out at, say, a dinner on the ground or a community meal or something like that, they're gone immediately. Everybody loves deviled eggs. Because you really don't want them laying around. Once they're out, they're out. And you don't know, they don't have much in the way of shelf life. But apparently, this gang of meth-munching sister fisters from Arkansas walks around with eggs in their pockets. Because they're little yellow pocket angel eggs. Hell, I never knew angels laid eggs. But I don't want you thinking that that this is something unique to the weirdos of the Duggar clan, because it's not. Going all the way back to when I was just a little bitty Baptist, going to the Baptist church down there, there were good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, blue-haired Christian ladies who absolutely would not buy those little tins of Underwood what ham? That's right, deviled ham. Because you never know when you're going to get possessed by a demon by eating the devil's ham. Yeah. Now, some folks, just to needle the Duggars, have begun to now refer to deviled eggs as satanic eggs. Really? Do we gotta? I guess we gotta. But I'm content to just know what the etymology and the history and origin of the deviled egg is. Christians. So many. So few lions. Wait, are we into food porn already in the part? Deviled eggs. A note from Ron and Raleigh. Oh, I know. I've been there. I've done that. Ron and Raleigh says, try mixing the yolks with some pimento cheese before refilling the white. Sprinkle with a little smoked paprika. We've done that. In fact, I did that after I saw pimento cheese deviled eggs on a menu back down in my hometown when I was headed home from New Orleans last summer. And they were some kind of good. We've got a little local joint here that has deviled eggs on the menu. And they're flavored with smoked trout. Some people just go wild over those. Me, I don't want my deviled eggs to be fishy. But yeah, pimento cheese works great. And there's nothing, and you know, there is such a thing as spicy pimento cheese. So you might even work a little bit of yellow mustard powder into the pimento cheese. And well, now, you'd be into something there. When we make them here, there used to be a chain called Ben Franklin, and it was all over the place. Well, one of the last remaining Ben Franklins is over in Fayetteville, and they have a delightful selection of Amish country spices and pickles and jams. And honest to God, the hottest thing I have ever eaten are the hot, spicy baby dills from the Amish people. And we chop those bad boys up and put them in the deviled eggs. And alongside those the mustard powder, yeah, it gets real interesting real fast. What's that, Steve in New York? Pocket angel eggs. Hey, son, reach in your pocket. See if you got an egg. I'm feeling a little hungry. Are these the type of people who would say heaven-o as opposed to hello? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, they are. Texas Town, and a link. Texas Town changes greeting to heaven-o from, oh, God. The ignorance is strong with these. Truly strong. But I mentioned the art of word-knowing in conjunction with this Duggar story, and we've got more serious things to deal with. We really do. Just the same, we have to make a quick stop, courtesy of a note from our dear friend Jude in the Great Northwest. And we have to make a quick stop in Joyzy, where a want of the art of word knowing has bitten the mayor of that town right in the tuchus. The town well, it's at the Jersey Shore. And somebody wrote a complaint We're talking about Brick Township, New Jersey, for folks who are familiar with places in New Jersey. Brick Township, New Jersey. And they've got a mayor there whose name is, and I don't think he's related to the Yahoo in the morning on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Brick Township Mayor John Ducey. Well, he wasn't paying real close attention to the social media. And you can get in trouble that way. Because one of his constituents turns out to be a vicious anti-Semite. The real kind. Not the, oh, you must be an anti-Semite because you oppose the Israelis slaughtering the shit out of the Palestinians. No. That's just butthurt. Real anti-Semitism. You know, Jews must die. All evil Jews. Right. You know, maggots. Trump supporters. So somebody added him on social media, at Mayor Ducey, can we please do something about our parks and beaches? They are being invaded by the Hasidic and Orthodox Jews and being ruined. Our tax-paying residents are being forced out while politicians sit and do nothing. You would think that would have been a clue, but whoever handles Brick Township Mayor John Ducey's social media really wasn't quite quick enough on the uptake. So the following occurred, and a kerfuffle has ensued. Because Mayor Ducey responded on Twitter, our park security has started already. Just call police with any problems, and they will send them out. As the philosopher Daffy Duck once noted, pronoun trouble. Instead of saying, wow, that's a disgusting and anti-Semitic tweet, and why don't you just fuck right the fuckity fuck off, the mayor or whoever handles his social media instead responded to the vicious racist with, our park security has started already. Just call police with any problems, and they will send them out. Leaving in a state of complete ambiguity who the they is and the them are. If the racists call the police will send the Orthodox and Hasidic Jews out of the beach. Granted, it's a standard response. When you reach out to the Lord Mayor, and the Lord Mayor writes back and says, well, if you've got a problem, that's what our police are for. Just give them a call and they'll send them out. Except in this case, it made it sound like the mayor was going to send the police to eject the Hasidic and Orthodox Jews from the beach. And I presume that Hasidic and Orthodox Jews enjoy the beach just as much as any other human being does. So, public beaches, you know, they're part of the public. Now, hopefully, any of them from, like, Brooklyn who are carrying the fucking measles won't come down, because that's a real problem. That's why New York had to pass a mandatory vaccination rule. And I'm sure there are people hooting and hollering even as we speak. Ooh, my religious rights to get the measles is being compromised. But in this case, it's just a gentle warning to pay attention to, one, who's writing to you, B, what they're saying, and C, pronouns. Just for the fun of it, let's see if we could fix that. Our park's security has started already. That means it's spring. Might be a little bit chilly at the beach. The water's still kind of probably cold. But park's security is on the job. Okay, we can leave that there. Just call police with any problems, and the police will be sent out. You could use the passive voice. or just call the police with any problem, and Parks Security will be sent out. Pronouns can get you in all kinds of trouble. I mean, sometimes proper nouns can, too. Throw mama from the train a kiss. Throw me down the stairs my hat. But that's a word order kind of thing, not a case of people thinking that the mayor has agreed to have all Hasidic and Orthodox Jews ejected from the brick township beaches. We live in a social media world. And the trick with Twitter is that while you've got, I think, what, 280 characters to fool with, you still have to be kind of haiku-ish about it. You have to use an economy of language. I was drafting a tweet earlier today. And I realized that there were potential problems there. So I spent a little extra time in my drafting. It had to do something that Julius Geezer had said. Namely, he made an ass of himself again today. Not that he really has to work at it. But he got terribly, terribly upset about a New York Times story that painted an accurate portrayal of something that he had actually said on the phone. Hallie Jackson was anchoring over on MSNBC earlier today, and I guess the chlamydia Claudius has been putting in some MSNBC time. Hallie Jackson said the following. The president called up the friend of our show, Bob Costa, overnight on an unrelated topic, and Bob smartly asked him about all these subpoenas that House Democrats are issuing against the Trump administration. And the president made the argument to the Post, hey, I cooperated plenty with Robert Mueller. What do I have to cooperate with Congress for? The operative portion of the description being that the president called Robert Costa of the Washington Post, and they had a conversation. This greatly, greatly vexed the very good brain of the resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, who ran to the Twitter and said, I didn't call Bob Costa of the Washington Post. He called me. Well, that's a legitimate beef. If it's being reported that you called the reporter, but the reporter actually called you, then Hallie Jackson on MSNBC was factually wrong. Robert Costa called him. He didn't call Robert Costa. Why would the great and powerful Oz call Robert Costa? You know that's not where it ends, right? Of course not. I didn't call Bob Costa of the Washington Post. He called me. Paren returned his call.
yeah.
So he did call Robert Costa.
It just more fake news. I didn't call Bob Costa of the Washington Post. He called me, returned his call. Just more fake news.
Gentle reminder, dear Horn Family Community Congregation. This is the guy who has the nuclear codes at his beck and call. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I crafted a very carefully worded tweet. Reply. God almighty, but you truly are a moron, you sweaty sack of fear, fraud, and fat. You admit in your own tweet that you called him. You're making the case yourself for removing you as unfit under the hashtag 25th Amendment. If I had simply started that, well, it wouldn't have worked out well. And then earlier today, there was also,
can anyone comprehend what a great job Border Patrol and law enforcement is doing on our southern border?
Period. Not question mark. Can anyone comprehend? It's a question, but it ends with a period.
So far this year, they have apprehended 418,000,
all caps,
plus illegal immigrants.
418,000 what's plus illegal immigrants? We're sort of left to ponder.
Way up from last year. Mexico is doing very little for us.
All caps.
Dems in Congress must act now.
So again, I wanted to make sure that I had a well-crafted tweet in response. Shut up, you sweaty sack of fat and fear. Your Border Patrol connived with a militia to assault hundreds of migrants in New Mexico. You'd better resign before all of your many high crimes and misdemeanors come home to roost in your tacky-ass comb-over. Complete sentences, clearly enunciated ideas. And by the way, the guy who was running around playing I Want to Be an Airborne Ranger and assaulting all of those migrants, you know, while carrying guns, he's been arrested on an old firearms charge. So the guns he was carrying around, he wasn't supposed to be carrying around because he doesn't have the right to. Yep, right. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the whatever they call themselves are pissing and moaning loudly about how these were trumped up charges. Some days, well, I had obligations today. I had the Frontier guy coming by to work on the always problematic internet lines. And then later today, I had to take Margie to the doctor again. She had another appointment. So I couldn't engage in any salutary morning-type day drinking. But damn if it's not a challenge sometimes. Apparently I started something with the deviled eggs. Ron in Raleigh says, I use pimento cheese with jalapenos from Costco. It has a spicy kick. Oh, I love the jalapeno pimento cheese. Meanwhile, Dave reporting from the blind in Taliban, Indiana. Deviled eggs are a problem? The Duggars being a cult of their own and not what I would call a normal family. That's almost Mark Twain-esque. It really is, Dave. It doesn't surprise me in the least these are the same people that would refer to Easter as Resurrection Day because of the pagan etymology of the word Easter. Funny thing is, there's no pagan etymology to Easter. Any resemblance to Ishtar or Astarte is strictly coincidental. It just happens to be a Germanic/Celtic thing. But it's Christian. It's one of the few that they... I mean, if you overlook the whole bogarting on Passover part, they kind of came up with it by themselves. But anyway, losing sight of what they claim to be celebrating... I see what you did there, Dave. Losing sight of what they claim to be celebrating on that particular day. They're probably also the same types that have a special name for the war on Christmas. Do I get all the Easter and Christmas candy they don't want? Please send it in care of the blind here in Taliban, Indianapolis. Your buddy Dave. The 500 is coming for me. I asked the community congregation to pray for us. What about a nurse? A cold? What a wonderful... What, I think it's just 33 speed demons in a large parade downtown. running roughshod over Ron's gimmick, Silent R. Lamar says, Bob, 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 all in caps. There you go again, hurting America. You should have called the health department on the Duggar family for the pocket angel. E. coli. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Speaking of the Jews, says Ron and Raleigh, Jared Kushner and two other fellows named Jason Greenblatt, Avi Berkowitz, plus David Friedman, U.S. Ambassador to Israel, are going to reveal their Middle East peace plan. I know I'd have confidence in a peace plan devised by three Jewish fellows if I was a Palestinian. No thumbs on the scale here. Well, there was a little bit of a tease going out ahead of that in that young Jared, super genius, says that he does not believe in a two-state solution, which kind of, well, doesn't bode well for that whole being a Palestinian thing. Sort of makes you the... subject of a potential genocide. Slow moving, so hopefully no one will notice. Yeah. Onward to Iowegia. You know, from time to time, I talk about the fact that these good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians have a real predilection for taking out their pogo sticks and leaping right up onto the cross. Move over, Jesus, I can do it better than you. And there's a lot of it that goes on. But I'd have to say, as far as pogo sticking up onto the cross is concerned, I have to give credit where credit is due to Steve Cantaloupe's Nazi King of Iowa. He gave a town hall, a nice, safe one, with a pet audience, in a place called Cherokee, Iowa. And at that town hall, a woman by the name of, and I'm not making this up, Reverend Pinky Person, I thought I had pretty well established myself as the Pinky Person here. I mean, you know, burns under a refrigerator light bulb, all that stuff. You know, it has to wear a Fremen still suit just to walk out under a noonday sun in April. I thought I was the Pinky Person. But no, there's apparently someone in Cherokee, Iowa, by the name of Reverend Pinky Person, who runs the Faith in Christ Fellowship. Because all those Baptists and Methodists and Lutherans... That's not a fellowship of faith in Christ. Just the Faith in Christ Fellowship of Cherokee, Iowa, led by Reverend Pinky Person. Oh, come on. Wait a minute. No, God damn it, this is from the Des Moines Register. It's not the Onion. I don't think anybody working for the Onion could ever get away with naming someone Reverend Pinky Person. But Reverend Pinky Person of the, you know... She's one of his fourth congressional district of Iowa constituents. She was a concerned citizen. And she said, Brother Steve, I'm really concerned that Christianity is really being persecuted. Now, mind you, no one is being fed to any lions, or coyotes, or even cranky Vietnamese pot-bellied pigs. the only Christians being persecuted in the United States are, for the most part, the people with the people who are not pinky persons, who are considerably darker than pinky, who are having their churches bombed and burned down. I'm guessing the Faith in Christ Fellowship has not been torched to the ground any time in the recent past. But nonetheless, at some point in time, somebody probably brought Reverend Pinky Person a cold cup of coffee, and she has felt persecuted ever since. Not much of a question, is that? I'm concerned that Christianity is really being persecuted. This, of course, gave Representative Steve Cantaloupe's Nazi King the opportunity to demonstrate his pogo stick skills. When I have to step down to the floor of the House of Representatives and look up at those 400 and some accusers, you know, we just passed through Easter and Christ's Passion, and I have better insight into what he went through for us, partly because of that experience. Yeah. Steve King got called down by his own Republican colleagues, and not very sternly at that, for being a Nazi and a white supremacist generally. And somehow or another, that gives him insight into the suffering of Jesus H. Christ. Mm-hmm. Because they're exactly the same. Absolutely. Being called out for being a Nazi is just like having to haul your own crossbeam all the way through Jerusalem, whose streets were not well paved at all, and having a crown of thorns jammed down on your head, and before any of that, having the literal living shit whipped out of you. And so you're bleeding and wore out and tired, and you got a 4x4 strapped to your arms. And you got to carry that through Jerusalem with a bunch of people hooting and hollering at you. And then you get up to the top of Golgotha, and they take the crossbeam off of you for a minute, and you think, whew, that's a relief. But the next thing you know, they're laying you down on it, and they're driving nails through your arms to make sure that you stay right there where they put you on the cross. Having your committee assignments stripped away from you for being a Nazi is exactly like that. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Nothing in the reportage here from the Des Moines Register, but I assume that that the answer positively made Reverend Pinky Person beam with Christian pride. But tucked away in the story, a buried lead, is the fact that there is some ecumenical growth taking on, because Steve Cantaloupe's Nazi King is a Roman Catholic. And I'm pretty sure that in the past, Reverend Pinky Person of the Faith in Christ Fellowship, I'm pretty sure that's not a Roman Catholic operation. And your Faith in Christ Fellowship types, your independent Pentecostal or Protestant, used to have a habit of referring to people of Steve King's faith as being mackerel snappers or papists or idolaters or the always handy Mary worshipers. But they've got a common bond now. The persecution of poor, poor Steve Cantaloupe's Nazi King, who knows exactly what Jesus went through because he lost a committee assignment. All because he said white nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization. How did that language become offensive? And no amount of explaining to Steve Cantaloupe's Nazi King is going to make him understand that Knight Riders burning people to death and murdering them and lynching them and beating them and tossing their little 15-year-old bodies into a river wrapped in chains and a fan from a cotton gin, nothing's ever going to help him to understand that that's in any wise worse than him losing a committee assignment, because he is Steve Cantaloupe's Nazi King. Yeah. Note from Michael in Madison. Person people. Does Pinky have a brother, the Reverend Brain Person, and every night they try to take over the world? Narf. I'm so glad you picked up on that, Michael, because I would have been ashamed of myself to have gone through an entire program without a Pinky in the Brain reference for Reverend Pinky Person. What are we going to try to do tonight, Brain? Yeah, my Pinky in the Brain's no good, but same thing as every night. Right. Try to take over the world. Narf! They're Pinky in the Brain, person. Thank you, Michael. That definitely gets a cowbell, without a doubt. Also, from Albert in Rhode Island, Bob, when Trump ends up in hell, he will have to obey hell's social media rules. One, everyone must use proper English, no acronyms, when sending a text. Two, there's a tax on every text you send. It costs you 2,000 bitcoins to send a text. And three, your cell phone bill has to be paid daily. It costs you 1,000 bitcoins per second. I don't think he's got that kind of money, Albert. Wait, what? Says Ron and Raleigh. What committee was Jesus on? I'm asking for a friend. Jesus was on the Money Lenders Oversight and Reform Committee, Ron. It's right there in Flip Floppians 269. And then, of course, because faith in America, there's Franklin Graham. Yes, Franklin Graham, that expositor of the saving, loving grace of Christ Jesus, who is doing everything in his power to save the eternal, yet at present damned soul of Pete Buttigieg. Because Mayor Pete, who has politics that I do find problematic, but I've made a point of saying I'm not going to slime any of these Democratic candidates. I'm going to let the thing play out. But the one thing Mayor Pete has done is he has scared the bejesus out of the white wing evangelical religion industry, because he started kind of working their corner with some of them Jesus words. Never mind souls. That cuts into the accounting. I'm sure Franklin Graham would prefer that Pete Buttigieg be the typical hedonistic, godless, disco-dancing, homosexual that he imagines everyone to be. In Franklin Graham's hypocritical world, there are no gay people who simply take long walks in the long walks on the beach at sunset holding hands. or get up and have breakfast on Saturday morning and say things like, please pass the salt. No, because Franklin Graham has lived this sick, sordid life of hypocrisy and false piety, he spends, as so many of them do, an inordinate amount of time absolutely fascinated with not the day-to-day lives of gay people, but the sex lives of gay people. And so he has called upon Pete Buttigieg to repent for being, Pete Buttigieg. Because the Pete Buttigieg who exists at this time in this universe is gay. He says that being gay is, quote, something to be repentant of, not something to be flaunted, praised, or politicized. Naturally, he did this on Twitter. And naturally, even though there is no proof whatsoever that Pete Buttigieg has ever done anything like commit, adultery or fornication, somehow Franklin has managed to not be able to find it in God's holy word where maybe the president he worships possibly as much as he or more than he does Jesus H. Christ ought not have been running around and sticking his tiny mushroom-shaped penis in porn stars while his wife was 6 weeks postpartum with his fifth kid by his third baby mama. No, Frank couldn't do that. All this because at a town hall on CNN, Pete Buttigieg recently declared, God does not have a political party. Well, Franklin Graham was not going to let that stand unaddressed. He's right, says Franklin Graham. God doesn't have a political party, but God does have commandments, laws, and standards. You know, like not eating fucking shrimp, which I'm pretty sure Frank's done somewhere along the way, and at least according to the crap he believes in, he's gonna burn for in hell forever for every last godforsaken, literally, shrimp cocktail he has ever consumed. Oh, and Frank. Oh, Franklin. Don't think for a minute that the Almighty didn't see you that day when you put on that 65-35 cotton poly blend dress shirt. Yeah, you're gonna fry for that one too, Frank. He does have laws, commandments, and standards. Mayor Buttigieg says he's a gay Christian. The Bible says marriage is between a man and a woman, not two men, not two women. All this, again, on Twitter. Well, the Bible also says a guy shouldn't have three wives, one right after the other. But Frank's never been able to find the time to criticize that in his, in the man he adores and actually worships and idolizes. Not so much. No. So, Franklin Graham, when it comes right down to it, is saying that Pete Buttigieg ain't really no Christian. Which I probably don't need, I probably don't need to point this out, but I will just the same. Is not his call to make. I mean, what does it say that the Pope at Rome has said it's not his call to make whether a gay person can be a Christian, but Franklin fucking Graham thinks it's his? Oh, ye generation of vipers. Yes, yes, Brother Deacon Asa. You are. He says, I'm not reading it. He says, I know, my place is right in the depths of the hot place. Now, the ninth circle is frozen, I think. And again, you already live in Canada, so never mind. Well, I'll get hate mail from Canada now. Busy, busy. Busy little evening we have here. And haven't gone anywhere near toward clearing the stack. Oh, no. Mm-mm. Because next, we need to check in. Well, thank you, Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you very kindly. Bob, you sounded just like Barney Fife with your "our rights to get measles have been compromised." I sprayed the keyboard and monitor. That's high praise. Don Knotts is one of my most admired fellow West Virginians. Well, now, I had no idea. Steve in New York pointing out, how's this for funny? Steve Cantaloupe's Nazi King is a member of the Small Brewers Caucus. What would that Reverend Pinky, what's her name? That's Pinky Person, Steve. Say about that? Well, that's, you know how those Catholics are, Steve. I mean, they're probably going to hell, but he's at least out there trying to keep the Christians from getting persecuted, so. Right. Not going to have any of that quoting from the monks, medieval monks business about in heaven there is no beer, that's why we drink it here. And we're damn sure not going to have anybody quoting over to the Life in Faith Tabernacle or whatever it is, the line from Benjamin Franklin about beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. Beer is Satan's pee-pee, and that's all there is to it. The more hops, the more demonic it is. Oh, dear. Heather says, my bear Pinky thinks you're talking about her. She keeps looking up and giggling. LOL.
Oh, Pinky's a good one. Oh, what a sweet baby Pinky is. Yes. Pinky's just wonderful.
James in Illinois, Franklin in the Twitter. Ain't there some sick, unholy shit happening on the Twitter? The Twitter is a filthy place. I confess I get a little bit of a kick out of tweeting in the morning as I watch the endless parade of stupid that takes place between the hours of 6 and 9 a.m. Over there where a raging Gingrich conservative has been given the morning drive, the most valuable piece of broadcast real estate that MSNBC owns every morning, you know, allegedly liberal network, right? Yeah. Agnes reminds me, you're married to Lilith, red-haired, divorced, I didn't submit on the first try, and born out of wedlock. What's a little deviled ham between friends? I've never, baby, I don't think we've ever tried it with the deviled ham. Is that an offer? Oh, shit, I'm going to pay for that one. It's just a tough night all the way around. I better be working on some expiation.
Supercalifragilisticexpiation.
No, never, no singing. We're done with fundraising. I can't threaten you that way. It's just wrong. Huh. Apparently, though, kind of here endeth the lesson, only not really. You remember from time to time when I've talked about paying the bills here, I've said that, you know, if we don't keep the bills for the interweb tubes paid, that the only way I'll be able to do the program is if I go out on the back step and holler. I don't mean to be engaging in so much prophesying, but I say it here and then it happens in the wider, weirder world. Because, we'll just see if we can get this audio to go. You'll understand what I mean. Maybe standing out on the back stoop and yelling, or at least you do using a bullhorn, is the next big thing. I don't know. Did we get to it last? I don't think we did. Yesterday, Julius Geezer, after having pissed and moaned about how his followers are being silenced on Twitter. The ignorant motherfucker doesn't understand what bots are, or he does, and he just wants more of them. He's complaining, and Jack over at Twitter, who's about as useless as tits on a tree, Jack tried to explain to him that, yeah, his follower count may fall from time to time because a bunch of them are bots. B-O-T-S. And then, of course, we know that more than half of Trump's followers are bots, B-O-U-G-H-T-S. But nonetheless, President Queeg is convinced that Jack is doing something with the strawberries that's making him, that Republicans,
conservative voices are being censored, muzzled on Twitter.
And Jack had to spend... Jack Dorsey, the better part of the meeting, explaining to him that that Twitter wants Donald Trump to have the best possible Twitter experience, so they're getting rid of bots. President Dipshit was not buying. But somehow or another, Alex Jones got a heads up that meeting was taking place. And since he's banned from Twitter and has been wiped out of most major internet media, he did what I've said I might have to do someday if we can't keep the bills paid here. He got a bullhorn and went out on the stoop and hollered.
Infowars.com. Infowars.com.
66 Mark.
Hey,
yeah, how you doing now?
God damn!
Sorry. You're fine. I just wanted to ask why you're so hell-bent on spreading hate.
I know. Free speech is hate.
Nice young woman says, I want to know why you're so hell-bent on spreading hate. And Alex, who's really kind of blowing up in more ways than one, says, I know. Free speech is hate. No, hate is hate. Hate is hate. Deliberately tormenting a murdered man's family. That's hateful. But not in the paranoid world of Alex Jones.
I'm going to ask why you're so hell-bent on spreading hate.
I know. Free speech is hate.
No, it's not.
Did you learn that word on NPR?
Wait, what? Free speech.
I didn't say there were fake WDs in Iraq with the New York Times that got millions killed.
I'm
not the one trying to kill babies that are already born.
Why are you shouting in police?
You know, it's the left, ladies and gentlemen.
And sadly, none of those fine young men wearing white coats who have those lovely sport jackets with the sleeves that go around the back and tie in the front showed up to provide any help whatsoever to screaming Alex Jones. I don't mean to prophesy like this, but, Sometimes it happens. Lee in New York. Stop prophesizing. Stop it, Bob. Stop prophesizing. Then maybe it won't happen. If only it worked that way. But when it's a power, you really can't do much about it. Like I said, it's like that Twilight Zone episode where the guy goes back to try to stop the assassination of Lincoln. The time stream is what the time stream is, unless, of course, you buy into the plot line of Star Trek Discovery. And I got to say, Agnes and I finished watching season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, and they did a passing fair job of trying to take something that seemed like it was totally non-canonical and then worked it back around to where it kind of, sort of, maybe was. I won't offer up any spoilers to anybody who hasn't seen it. I'll just say that from the moment I spent a lot of time wondering how somebody was going to wind up going, beep, beep. But it looks like there's room for a third season. That'll be cool by me. And although I may piss some people off, that series did confirm for me that I am and always will be far more of a Star Trek guy than a Star Wars guy. I like the reliance on science and technology, even if it's made-up science and gizmos that work at the last moment and that kind of thing, over a bunch of sort of psychobabble, pseudo-religious mumbo-jumbo. But that's me. But this whole thing of going somewhere and shouting, I mean, I never wanted to do the program that way. I'm sort of happy here in the fabulous Horn Studio in the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. But it looks like going somewhere and standing outside and shouting may be the next big thing in professional broadcasting. We had example one in the form of Alex Jones. And now we have example two in the form of no less than our old buddy, Coach Dave Daubenmeyer. Yeah, you remember Coach Dave Daubenmeyer, the man who was who only by the hair of his chinny chin chin saved his daughters from being short-haired lesbians with big bottoms, who played softball via the good heterosexual grace of Christ Jesus. Now, what's that, Brother Deacon Asa? I'm predicting that Alex Jones will succumb to an aggressive form of cancer. One simply cannot house that much hate inside of one's body without it taking a toll. Well, if it is, it will be the stupidest form of cancer that medical science has ever found. And if it should turn out that the whatever anomas that Alex comes down with share common genetics with frogs and monkeys and jellyfish from the hybrid biology farms of old Kowloon, well, then the irony will be that much greater, and we'll have to sacrifice twice the usual number of rubber chickens at midnight. Yeah. But Coach Dave Daubenmeyer took a road trip all the way from Ohio to Chappaqua, New York, where he stood on an empty street at the end of a cul-de-sac in front of the Clinton home on a rainy day in April, and, well, yelled.
This is Bill and Hillary. This is the greatest crime scene. One of the greatest crime scenes in American history right here, folks. 15 Old House Lane. the home of Bill and Hillary Clinton. I'm sure we're on cameras. I'm sure the FBI's probably been following me all day. And here's what I think, folks. What would it be like if we had 1,000 people out here petitioning the government to do its job and come and arrest Hillary Clinton? I just want you again to see the greatest crime scene in American history. Say, Coach, well, why'd you do what you did today?
Apart from being a practitioner of the art of word knowing, I'm also a practitioner of the art of history knowing. Greatest crime scene in American history, he says, of Bill and Hillary's home. I guess because it once had a server in it or something. I don't have enough spirits to discern the intent of Coach Dave Daubenmeyer. But if that's the greatest crime scene in the history of America, what do we say about Wounded Knee? What do we say about Rosewood, Florida? What do we say about Tulsa? What do we say about a Baptist church in Birmingham, Alabama? What do we say about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory? Or, in more modern terms, the Upper Big Branch mine explosion? Or not that long before that, the Sago mine explosion? Or 1907 and the Monongah mine explosion? What do we say about Ludlow, Colorado? Anything there, Coach Dave? Probably not. Yeah, thank you, James, in Illinois. What do we say about the Sand Creek Massacre, where Colonel John Chivington remarked, when asked about what to do about the Native American women and children, kill them all, nits make lice. Where does that fit with the sick maunderings of a bizarre, paranoid Christian freak like Coach Dave Daubenmeyer and his cross-festooned ball cap? Anything? Yeah, Monique, you're right. If all these Republican sex lives were truly popping, they wouldn't care about others. I know. The most sex-obsessed people are evangelicals. If their sex lives were fantastic, they wouldn't care about others' bedroom activities. Real talk. Bob, seriously. No black people do this shit. What if Black Lives Matter, NOI, Nation of Islam, posted these videos of Trump supporters? Can we reach a compromise, Monique? Almost no black people do this. And almost. Because, well, Hoteps. Sorry, but yeah, I saw them on the streets. They're hanging out on Barracks Row now. I don't know if they're still hanging out down by the Chinatown Metro Station, but yeah, they were doing their weird shit on Barracks Row there near the, I forget which metro station it is. But I agree. There's not a lot of this. And frankly, the Hoteps are the only ones I can think of who even get within the same area code as the likes of Coach Dave Daubenmeyer. Mm-hmm. But we're not done. Greatest crime scene in the history of America.
Hillary Clinton. I just want you again to see the greatest crime scene in American history. Say, Coach, well, why'd you do what you did today? Why'd you drive 8 hours out here today and then you're going to turn around and drive 8 hours back home?
Because stalker's going to stalk.
Because I'm telling you, if we do not come out into the streets and demonstrate that we are against this ungodly secret government that's going on. If we do not push, if Christians do not arise up and come out, I put a challenge out to Oath Keepers. I put a challenge out to all the patriot groups out there. Let's get organized and let's let the American people and President Donald Trump know that we're not going to put up with this.
Whatever, you know, this is. Okay. See, people of goodwill can compromise. Monique says, okay, almost. But then you also have Jesse Lee Peterson, so that cancels out. And by the way, the Hoteps are about, there's about five of them. I think there's slightly more than five, but point taken. And they don't have anywhere near the money that Coach Dave does, because this shit sells to dirt, ignorant, maggot white folks. I mean, it sells like the proverbial hotcakes. Answering Coach Dave's question, Steve from New York says, what would we have if we had 1,000 people out here? We'd have 1,000 crazy people in one place worthy of institutionalization. Round them up. Answering the same question, Earther says, what would it be like? 1,000 times more stupider a stir est? 1,000 folks at Shea Devil? Shea Devil. That's wait. Earther always brings the. Stephen, New York, great crime scene. Trail of Tears? The entire country for 400 years of slavery? Hiroshima? Nagasaki? But them's was brown folks in other countries. Yeah, right. Subject line, mental help. Silent R. Lamar says, then people like Alex Jones and Coach Dave show up and start yelling at people. We as a people should call the mental hospitals and they should be forced to pick these people up. Yeah, but who wants to do the paperwork? It always comes down to that. James in Illinois pointing out, Alex is such a different person when he's in a deposition trying to appear to be reasonable. It's almost like he can turn this on and off, like a faucet. Albert from Rhode Island says, Bob, Alex Jones needs to be sent to a hospital in Rusk, Texas. It's where Texas Maximum Security Mental Hospital's at. Sounds like a fine destination. What's that? Tracy says, Satan's Piss. The only beer that qualifies as Satan's Piss is anything beginning with Coors, Miller's, or Bud. This coming from someone who doesn't know piss all about beer. Love, Tracy, who's learning more about beer every day. Education is never a waste. Yay you, Tracy. Greatest crime scene in American history. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell. Greatest crime scene in American history. You could, I mean, how about the draft riots of 1864 in New York? Greatest crime scene in American history. 9/11 was a crime. With not one, but two, actually three crime scenes. Oh, greatest crime scene in American history. At the end of a cul-de-sac in an upper middle class neighborhood somewhere in the Hamptons. Got it. You betcha. Let's run over and see what's on Scott's mind. Hey, Scott. Scott.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
Okay, don't scare me because it makes me think my internet's gone bad.
No. It's not God. It struck you dead, Bob. That's what you thought. Don't lie to me, Bob. For a minute there, you thought the good Lord himself
had reached down the had reached down the fickle finger of fate and touched my internet connection.
The flying fickle finger of fate.
Yes.
My God. And that timing is remarkably off. Stand by. I'm running some water real quick.
Standing by.
Stand by.
Sweet mystery of life, at last I've found you.
Well, speaking of singing, what was that religious song you were singing?
I'm not sure.
Because it made me think of the flip side of that song on the single release, the DJ copy. 'Tis so sweet to exegesis.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, that was a real low cowbell.
Yeah, that's just one ding. I don't know, Bob. You know, when you think about who and what we're up against, you know, listening. The coach driving 8 miles to
8 hours.
Eight hours to and 8 hours from just to stand. Now, you know, you remember the Beverly Hillbillies. You know how long the driveway was, the tree line.
I can even hear the lovely acoustic electric guitar instrumental that went with it. Do, 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 do. Yeah.
To get up to the front door of the Clampett Mansion, you know that the coach was not anywhere near the front gate, even, to the Clinton Mansion, way up there in upstate New York somewhere. You know, and you think about Steve King, and you think about Alex Jones. You talk about compressed speech, which is one of the hallmarks of a manic situation going on. Jesus. You know, if they could harness the energy that these people waste defending the indefensible, you know, railing against intelligence and proclaiming the good news of stupid, irretrievably stupid, you know, you could
stupid with a capital
American
stew.
City. There you go. It boggles the mind. So this is who we're up against. You know, this is the howdy doody circus army of 31%, 32%, 33% that Trump and his minions and followers and defenders and apologists and official White House spokesmen and explainers. This is the motley crew, the howdy doody circus army, marching behind good old General Trump. You know,
onward, dipshit soldiers, marching as with whores, with an orange Jesus going on before.
Yes, I...
Right off the cuff, that was.
And to give yourself a bell, Bob, give yourself a bell.
I was flatting on a couple of notes there, so...
Well, that's all right.
We welcome you, springtime. Speaking of Barney Fife.
Oh, God. But, you know, when you wake up and think of things in those terms... Why are we the least bit intimidated by these asshats? I mean, yeah, they're doing way more than talking through, you know, portable megaphones, bullhorns. That's how those devices got their name, because ain't nothing coming through them but
bull. Right.
Bullshit. I don't know. You know, this is the motley crew that Trump has marching behind him. You know, if they can't be defeated while we're napping almost, then there's something wrong with us. I refuse to give them any credit. The problem must be with us. If we can't retake the White House, retake the Senate, and keep the House, and do that for the next five presidential election cycles, then there's something wrong with us. Something definitely wrong.
And something to get downright Appalachian. Something bad wrong.
Yeah, something serious wrong. And it just boggles the mind. I saw something on one of the websites, and I didn't even link to it or send it to you, about a long time Republican with a 50-year tenure as a Republican in the state of Iowa, who
just said, "Fuck it, I'm out of here."
I'm out of this party. It's your party, and you can laugh or cry if you want to. And apparently it's part of a trend. And Iowa is not known for, I mean, Iowa, there's a district in Iowa that has sent repeatedly Steve King to the House of Representatives.
I know, so I've said for a very long time that if I could get Sir Richard Attenborough to narrate it, I would be willing to go to that district and just start knocking on doors and looking at people the way that anthropologists look at, non-currently deemed, not modern humans.
Or even more relevant, the trouble is they are far removed from any form of reality that we would recognize. So I would compare them with, where is it, out in the South Pacific or the South American inner jungles? Every so often, there for a while, they would find a grouping of people who had never been known of before.
Yeah, and the funny thing is they wouldn't vote for Steve King.
Well, probably not. Probably not. Or the guy, I forget the guy's name, but he was like the last Japanese soldier from World War II held up in some cave or in some jungle on some island in the South Pacific somewhere. And this has got to be 45, 50 years ago now that they found this poor bastard. What would that make it? Early 70s, they find this guy who's been hiding out waiting for reinforcements against the round-eyed devils by that time for, 45, 55, 65, 37 years or something, fighting the good fight, holding down the old radio fort in hopes that the emperor would send help. And meanwhile, war done been over, Bob, since 1945.
Yep. Wasn't there a Gilligan's Island episode along those lines?
Oh, God, I don't know. I don't know.
Sorry.
I was not a real fan of Gilligan's Island.
Heretic, you're going to burn.
No, I mean, the guy who created that series is the same guy who gave us the Brady Bunch. There's another program that I had no earthly use for.
Pork chops and applesauce.
No earthly use. What? Oh, yeah, I know. Speaking of no earthly use for, Franklin Graham, you better watch your eternal soul, buddy. You better watch it. You better guard it. I don't know the chapter and verse, but isn't there, I think in a couple of the Gospels, in red letters, red King James letters, the voice, the verbiage of Jesus himself, saying that on Judgment Day, there are going to be some who are pleading their case between the high court, and I do mean the high court, before the Almighty, saying, "Lord, didn't we do this in your name? Lord, didn't we do that in your name?" And the Lord's going to say, "Fuck off. I never knew you." I just, You talk about a generation.
You're going to the barbecue, and we're not talking about Ashley's at 12 Oaks.
Right. You know, you talk about a generation of vipers. A lot of them do make asps of themselves. I should let me say that right now and be clear about it. But again, that's not why I called. I just, you know, it's like having the best seat in town for the Great American Freak Show, and you can't help but comment on some of the floats, you know, some of the marching band, some of the music emanating forth. The clown car, for Christ's sake, going back and forth from curb to curb with the weird...
God bless them, they marched even, real good, but they was off key the whole time. Yes, I get it.
Oh, you know, a horror show clowns in the clown car. You know, not handing out balloons to little kids, snatching up little kids to indoctrinate them and frighten them. You know, and turn them inside out with fear and trembling and just filling their otherwise empty heads with just the most vile sort of stuff. God, I'm on a roll today, and I've only had about a half a cup of coffee. What's in this stuff, Bob? But again, that's not why I called.
What's the matter, Scott? I'm a little anxious?
Yeah.
Why so nervous?
Yeah,
well, you're hiding behind my fucking refrigerator, man.
I came back unexpectedly and found Marcus Welby and Mrs. Olson in the back room doing something kinky. And they weren't making coffee, Bob. But anyway, I get a question.
They were grinding their beans.
Yes.
Halfway through the program, and we just got real filthy real fast.
Oh, that's all right. If you can't get filthy every now and again, what's the point in life? I hope Todd is tuned in because I have a question. He drove me just a wee bit crazy last night. Looking, he mentioned 16 in Webster Groves, the documentary on CBS about suburban white America in the late 60s. And then he mentioned that a documentary that was even better and more interesting, having to do with the Crenshaw area of Los Angeles. And I looked all over YouTube, and he didn't remember the title. See, here's the deal, Todd. When you're giving TV viewing tips, it helps to...
You have to tell us where to find it.
Well, no, he told me, YouTube. Well, Christ, you can find anything on YouTube. And I used all different keywords trying to figure it out. And I said, well, rather than drive myself any crazier than I am, I'll go ahead and wait until Wednesday. And maybe Todd will have mercy on me and send me a link. Or no, he doesn't know how to reach me, and I don't know how to reach him. So this is the best I can do. I'm reaching out this way, Bob. Because I loves me some good documentaries. You know that.
Oh, I know you do. By the way, Tracy has a question for you.
Oh, good.
When using the term stupid, is that stoopid, stewped, or just plain stupid? Just wondering, says Tracy.
That's a good question. I prefer the stwopid.
Stupid. Yeah, right.
Because...
Whereas stewped would be stupid.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just a personal preference. The double O stupid is, as a matter of fact, that's a good designation. How stupid is he? That boy's double O stupid.
Double naught.
Yeah. So, let's see. There was something also. Oh. I want to tell you, my sleep, and it happens every time we spring forward, my sleep pattern gets fucked up for about 6 weeks. And those 6 weeks are not up yet. So I basically went to bed so late in the mid-morning, Monday going into Tuesday, that I overslept completely and completely missed the live program on Tuesday. So I listened online last night. And I want to tell you, last night's show between you and Todd and Tracy and Lady B's incredible email that just blew my pale, pasty white ass away, I dare say in the years that I've been listening to this program, that was the best damn program that you've put on so far, in my estimation.
Wow.
And anybody who did not listen to the Tuesday horn, the Trump-tanic Tuesday horn of, what was that, April 23rd?
Yes, yesterday.
Is that right? Look it up on your old Podbean or Bean Pod or Beanie and Cecil or whatever the hell the thing comes out on now, and listen to that show, because there are some not just little teeny tiny, the mind's done been played out nuggets of truth and reality and maybe even a smidgen of hope in that show yesterday. There's some big main vein, you know, 1849 size chunks of rich, rich ore to be mined from that show. And the emails generally were of a par that, I mean, because this is what we have to do. We have to play out the various scenarios, A, to figure out what the hell might be happening and how it might play out, but also to equip ourselves with what we need to do. Because with each scenario, there's going to be a different terrain to fight on and a different battle plan to engage in, you know, in this upcoming 2020 extravaganza. God, I don't look forward to a minute of it, Bob. But I'm going to charge in there anyway, because the stakes are too high for you to stay home or to not be involved, people. I'm telling you, the pile of chips at the center of the green felt-covered table in 2020 is unlike any pile of chips that we've played for before.
It's the bank.
And somebody...
It's all in and the whole bank.
Somebody's going to win those chips. And the power that goes with winning that big pile of chips. And if it's not the forces of reality and intelligence and science and maybe even a little wisdom and maybe even a little humor and maybe a lot of damn love, we are definitely screwed. We are definitely screwed. And I don't mean to preach, but Jesus, come on now.
I'll just say, based on the way he's responding, you remember the old saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away?
Yeah, and who he? You mean Trump?
Yeah, the way Chlamydia Claudius has been behaving lately. A subpoena a day puts the MAGA away.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
yeah,
isn't there some, doesn't this have something to do with Boyle's gas laws or something like that, about constantly building pressure, constantly building pressure on a gaseous object in a confined space, and if the gas doesn't have somewhere to go, it's going to blow?
Is that chemistry or physics? Because I didn't.
It probably crosses boundaries, but I learned it in chemistry.
Give me an example. Are we talking about a carbonation popping the cork effect, or
no? Let's talk about the time my buddy's friend put a pot of beans on in the pressure cooker in their new kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And just turned the fire up on high.
Yeah.
Now, proper pressure cooker operation, you get a boil going, and the valve will go, pssst, and you'll see the steam, so you know you're boiling. So you back the heat off down to warm, and you there's a little pressure relief thingy that sits on top of that.
Yeah.
Right. And so at that point,
like a little pop-up timer.
Yeah, you've got several Earths worth of, I mean, you've got, you know, 500 feet under the ocean kind of pressure going on in there at that point.
Yeah.
But if the pressure builds up more than it can relieve through that little banger valve, you're going to wind up with beans all the way into the living room. I know this for a fact. And they're going to be burnt beans. Mm. And they're not going to smell nice, and they're going to be real messy. And I think if we just keep dropping subpoenas on him, pop goes the weasel.
Yeah. Well, not just subpoenas, but if every House panel and committee and subcommittee, Democratic-run House, Democratic Party is now in charge of the House of Representatives, and you have a lot of committees and subcommittees and panels who have a lot of things that they're responsible for. And I know this, I know this will shock a lot of people based on the last 2 years of the performance of the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives does have an actual function in American government, though there was a great absence of it for the first 2 years of the Trump regime. You couldn't have told it by me with Devin Nunes. Geez, there's a piece of work. And his pipeline direct to the Trump, probably the campaign and the administration both. There's another one we need to, unless he's already quit or been driven out. I can't keep track of him, Bob. I can't keep track of him. But there are, you say, well, wait a minute. Will they change their minds? Will they begin to embrace another way? Well, I give you that representative, that state representative up in Iowa the other day. And I'm sure there have been others.
Well, there are, as a matter of fact, there are others. William Weld, former governor of Massachusetts, has declared that he wishes to primary Donald Trump. And of all the people, he's not mincing words. I mean, I've got a list of 19 responses from various candidates to how we should handle this. It runs from, and you got Cory Booker, who says there's a lot more investigation that should go on. I tend to agree with that. Pete Buttigieg says that it's pretty clear he deserves impeachment, but he says that's for the House and Senate to do, and he's not in the House or the Senate. Julian Castro says that it's in the hands of Congress now. Tulsi Gabbard, who is she's one of the few candidates that I don't have any problem saying just stone cold fucking nuts. I don't think we should defeat Donald Trump through impeachment. I think it's really important for us in this country to come together and have the American people vote to take Donald Trump out of office in 2020. You know, that's groovy, Tulsi. But what if the vote is as dummied up and faked up and frauded up as the one in 2016 was? Kirsten Gillibrand says we should have something that she refers to as next steps. Kamala Harris says...
Put a bookmark in Ms. Gillibrand for a moment. There was a piece in the paper, and I think I sent you the link to it last week.
Well, hold on just a minute, because, I mean, that's just a sort of a selection. On the other hand, William Weld, former Massachusetts governor, has said straight up, if Donald Trump is an American patriot, he should resign. And it was published in something called The Bulwark. Trump's rampant dishonesty and paranoia render him incapable of serving as president. For once, he should put the United States ahead of his own ego and resign. And now I guess, what's his name, Larry Hogan? Is that his name? The governor of Maryland is thinking about... governor of Maryland is thinking about running in his own right as a Republican. So
no, I don't know too much about him.
Well, I mean, he hasn't made the decision. William Weld has. And the 19 aren't calling for Donald Trump to resign. The one Republican challenging him is. And that ain't a good look for us.
No. Well, and you have to wonder about the veracity of some of these Republicans. Because what was Mitt Romney's, now Senator Mitt Romney of the great state of Utah, what was, and former GOP presidential nominee in 2012, what was Senator Mitt's response to what we found out thus far from the Mueller report?
I was disgusted. I was disgusted.
Yeah.
So he was disgusted, but he's not willing to do a goddamn thing about it.
Well, yeah, and wasn't he the one who got up in the middle of the day on wall-to-wall coverage, on live television, and told us what, you know, miserable, disgusting, pitiful scum the Orange Menace was going in to voting in 2016, which seems like a fucking lifetime ago, Bob, but it's only been two and a half years right at. You know, where have you been all this time, Mitt? You keep telling us what the problem is. You got your white lab coat on and your pointer and your chart, but you're not...
That's just funny.
You're not following through with what you claim to believe and know.
Yeah, because, you know, again, with the sporting analogies, if you stop your swing halfway and just tap the ball, it's called a bunt, and it's generally something you do because you deliberately want to be thrown out. You got to follow through, Mitt. You got to follow through.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want the ball to go over the fence, son, you got to follow through.
And this is not earth-shattering news, Bob. Any little leaguer, any peewee baseball team in suburban places all over America this spring and summer.
You can't short arm it, son. You can't short arm it. You'll get thrown out by the shortstop every time.
Even the poor little kid who's on the bench most of the time, who can't see well, who can't hit, who can't throw, even that little kid who doesn't have the practical ability does understand the principles of the fucking game. Okay?
Bingo.
Jeez.
And again, we're back to Casey Stengel managing the first season of the Mets, turning in frustration to his bench and asking, does anybody here know how to play this game?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm telling you, Bob. And if I can see this, and you can see this, and many people in this country can see this, just regular everyday folks. See, what I'm holding out for, I think, is that there are people in this country who see the Republicans and Trump for precisely what and who they are.
Well, it's like what Monique said to me via Twitter a little bit ago. It's 2016 all over again. We have to get out and vote overwhelmingly.
Convincingly.
So much so that it can't be stolen.
Irrefutably.
And the problem is, with somebody like Chinless Mitch McConnell, what I told Monique privately is, I don't know how you come up with those overwhelming numbers in Kentucky. But he's got to go. I don't know if you saw the headline earlier today, but it's part of the stack here, Scott. Chinless Mitch told a group assembled in Owensboro, Kentucky. I know where that is. He said, "We're having a legitimate debate about the virtues of socialism, and I don't want you to think it's just a 28-year-old congresswoman from New York. This is much broader than that. I've got five colleagues in the Senate, five colleagues running for president, who have signed on to the Green New Deal and Medicare for All. I don't want you to think this is just a couple of nutcases running around on the fringe. This is pervasive policy view on the other side. Are we going to turn this into a socialist country? Don't assume it cannot happen. If I," and this is the pull quote, Scott, "if I'm still the majority leader of the Senate, think of me as the Grim Reaper. None of that stuff's going to pass. None of it." Now, not to get all purple, tattered robe with the frayed moons and stars and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby," written in glowing dark paint across the front of it, but it's something I've been saying for a while. You still there, Scott? Namely, we got to go after McConnell, and we got to go after Cornyn, and we got to go after them with an absolute will.
Speaking of Cornyn and Senator, is it MJ Hagar?
Yeah, Hager. They're
not senator, but candidate.
Yeah.
Announced candidate down in Texas who's going up against Cornhole there. Did you get the email I sent?
I did, yes.
Does that give you any hope or at least enlightenment as to what her chances might be?
I think
so. She did in... In 2018, she did run against a couple of guys, for a House seat.
In a deeply Republican district, and came within 3 points. Basically the same result that Beto O'Rourke got statewide with Raffi Alito.
Yeah, I think this is the other thing, what I was getting at, Bob. There are people in this country, and some of them are Republicans or independents, who are seeing the GOP for what it is, who are saying, well, for 35 years now, these crazy bastards have been saying this is going to happen for us and that is going to happen for us and all this other good stuff is going to happen for us. Just keep reelecting us, brother. Keep reelecting us. And what do we have to show for it? A tax cut that favors the already obscenely wealthy, and infrastructure that's cracking up and falling apart, and bridges that fall down every couple of years somewhere in America. You know, we've got jobs that we've not seen in this country, entire industries even, that we haven't seen in this country for the better part of a generation. We've got stupidity running rampant in the halls of power in this country. We've got science being utterly ignored and outright disputed in this country. We've got a U.S. Senate that not too long ago, the leader of said body refused to allow and make way, clear a way for a bona fide nominee for a seat on the goddamn Supreme Court to come in and be talked to and be interviewed and be questioned and then appear before the entire world, before the Senate Judiciary Committee, in the person of Mitch McConnell, the what did he call himself, the Grim Reaper?
Yep.
You know, so here's
you all can just call me the Grim Turtle.
Yeah, here's where we are, people. If you don't at long last, God, I think it's Joseph Welch, the man who drove the first nail in Wisconsin Senator Joe McCarthy's political coffin. At long last, sir, have you no sense of decency, you know? America is at a crossroads. And one of two things can happen at this crossroads. We can take the road, certainly less traveled in recent decades, that will move us forward in a responsible, intelligent way that is more in keeping with our principles that we claim we have. We can take that road, less traveled from the crossroad, or we can make the last couple of installment plans on the transaction of transferring our soul to the dark place. Those are your choices, people. That's where we're at. God damn, I'm wound up today. And I don't mean to be. I did this half of this.
No, you, no, no, nobody, nobody does, but you just get that way.
Well, I get that way because I get it, Bob. I see what the hell's been going on the last 35 years in this country, and it has not been pretty. And I, for one, and God knows I'm better off than a lot of people in this world. A, I live in a state that takes the lowest person on the rung seriously. Our well-being is a consideration in the discussion. Okay, so yeah, there's a lot of people way worse off than me, but many of us, even though a lot of us won't consider ourselves such, have been casualties of this 35-year reign of bullshit in this country. When are you going to say, as Howard Beale said in the Film Network, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Maybe there were signs of it in 2016, but they picked the wrong, quote, solution. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe there was outrage in the land and weariness and wariness in the land. And they just, they picked the most shinerly wrapped package without much thought about what was inside. Well, I think we found out what's inside this gaily wrapped present. You talk for a minute, Bob.
No, I get it, but there was a whole lot of white lash and a whole lot of burn baby burn from a whole lot of whitely hot, and I do mean white hot angry people with economic anxiety who knew exactly what they were getting, wanted what they were getting from the moment that he came down that golden goddamned escalator blathering about Mexican rapists. They heard that and said, that's our guy. Any reason to think otherwise?
Well, I'm just thinking of the people. I'm not talking about the ones who knew all along what we were in for. I'm talking primarily about the Democrats who switched over, some of the independents that switched over, and some of the Republicans who should have known better, frankly, than to have cast their vote and bought a hat and voiced their support for this asshat. That's who I'm talking about. Because in the end, those are the people who are going to, some of those people are going to be the ones who will be part of the solution in 2020. It's not just the Democrats. I'm not entirely sure that my own party is going to have a handle, have enough of a handle on not only the nature of the problem, but the caliber of and qualities of the solution.
No. That's why I pointed out the distinction and the broad difference between William Weld of Massachusetts saying if there's a shred of honor and dignity and patriotism about him, he should resign. That's a Republican, a Massachusetts New England Republican, that deeply endangered species known as the liberal Republican, compared to, say, Bernie, who says he doesn't think impeachment's a good idea.
Well, wait a minute. Chirps, what's the deal? You hungry? Okay, maybe she was just getting picking up my scary vibe this afternoon. Yeah, I get that. I do, Bob, but I'm not entirely sure. Do we want to make a point through this impeachment? Is that what the object of the exercise is? Because other than getting more stuff about Trump disclosed,
no, that's why Scott, that's why I spend that's 3 hours a night out on the goddamn ledge. Because on the one hand, I know that impeachment is a fool's errand. Because it's a battle that you win, and you know, it cannot be won. The Senate will not convict. Okay, there's not even a lot. There's not a Powerball player's chance, which I think is somewhere around 1 in 315 million.
Yeah.
Of the Senate voting to convict upon a bill of impeachment, no matter how obvious the violations and no matter how clear the proof, it ain't gonna happen. Okay, that piles up against the idea that there are just that you can't blink at treason and you can't just take a powder on obstruction of justice and say, as Joni Hog D. Baller Ernst did, well, that's just part of his brash demeanor. Go to hell, sister.
Yeah.
Brash demeanor, my maiden aunt's ass.
But play with me for a moment, Bob.
Sure.
Even if we do impeach, okay, and it wouldn't take a lot at this point, I think the people are ready to do something, okay? But if in the doing of that something, nothing changes, well, then you've got that to dance with. But here's something else. I see going down the impeachment road at this time, let me throw that proviso in there. At this time, I see going down the impeachment road tantamount to walking in to a trap set by Trump and the GOP. Okay, if we do go down that impeachment road, you know, just as sure as you're sitting there naked, or maybe not naked, I don't know today. I don't think you gave the weather. Maybe
it was a lovely day. It is naked radio.
Okay.
I was just trying to save people the nightmare visions.
Well, you know, as sure as you're sitting there naked, Bob, naked, that if we go down that road, that is going to be the biggest hammer that the GOP and the Citizens United money is going to be using in ads. You're not going to be able to turn on a toaster without picking up a fucking, you know, corporate ad in the 2020 cycle. So there's that. Now people say, but wait, if we impeach fully in the House and it's irrefutable and we've got charts and graphs and photographs, 8x10 color glosses with pictures and arrows and a description on the other side, okay, we've got all that and there's no doubt that the man has been impeached. But out of that, the Senate doesn't convict. Can't we use all the names and records of those senators on the GOP side and even a few on the Democratic side, frankly, who will not vote for conviction in the Senate? Can't we use them in our ads in 2020? Well, it ain't the same. I think you know that it ain't the same. Because reality-based reality, strangely enough, doesn't carry the same weight as the bullshit and the jive talk does in today's world, politically speaking. So yeah, I would love to see this son of a bitch impeached.
Right, but again, and this goes back to what I've been talking about for seemingly way too long now. I support the idea of continuing to have hearings. I think you have to develop the record. And I think you have to keep putting on, just keep turning the heat up, and make the Oval Office a pressure cooker, with the heat way too high. I think that's what you have to do. You have to make him crack. And he will crack. The question is, how dangerous will it be when he does? But we have to continue the hearing process. You have to let Elijah Cummings and Audie Maxine and what's his name, Neil, and Schiff, and all of those folks develop the evidence of how crooked he is. They're shitting kittens in the White House right now, kittens with crocheted tails, because they've convinced themselves that even if somehow or another they can manage to just serially violate the law and not turn over the tax returns that have been requested by Ways and Means, that Mueller, they've convinced themselves in the White House, already has several years of tax returns. That's the level of paranoia that they're operating with at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
And speaking of the tax returns, Bob, somebody made the point, I don't know whether it was on the program yesterday or somewhere else where I saw it or read it, that the accountants, what was the name of the accountant company that Trump uses?
Mazar, I think.
For
Mazar, I think.
Mazar. Okay. There's no privacy issue when they've been subpoenaed, when those records have been subpoenaed. The taxpayer may have privacy defense, okay, but the company that did the return, the accountant company that did the return, their copies are fair game in the evidentiary chain. Do I have my understanding?
According to what our buddy Jug of Punch said, yeah. The copy that the accounting firm retains and the knowledge that they gain, it's not even close. They get a subpoena, they got a show.
Yeah. And I'm sure at that point, Trump will try to pull some sort of confidentiality agreement or something out of his butt. But it won't have any effect in the grand scheme of things, because the power of the House committee and its need for this document for a legitimate purpose will outweigh any agreement that Trump might have had with the accounting company. Is that pretty much correct?
So, I mean, the accounting firm is probably in its own, has created an ethical shitstorm all its own by saying, well, we're going to have to wait and see what the lawyers say. Because there's no defense. From the accounting firm standpoint, there is zero defense. But what they're counting on, Scott, and this is important, is Bob Barr, or Bill Barr, rather. I don't know why I keep saying Bob. Bill Barr. Among other things, he instructed recently a government employee to ignore a subpoena. Now, traditionally, you do that at your peril. But he is the entirely...
Are we talking about Mnuchin?
No. No, I'm not talking about Mnuchin. This is an underling. I'm looking for the story now. But it's an underling who was supposed to show up, and Bill Barr told him, unless he can... There it is. It took me a minute. The subpoena was for a guy by the name of Stephen Boyd, who is the top liaison of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, liaison to the Congress. I'm sorry. No, that's he's the subpoena is for DOJ official John Gore. John Gore was subpoenaed by House Oversight, Cummings. And Bill Barr told Stephen Boyd to write a letter telling Elijah Cummings to go fuck himself. Because he was being told he could not show up with a lawyer. Well, it's a congressional investigation. And so you got to wonder, why the lawyer? Well, the reason the lawyer is there is to say, don't answer that, don't answer that, don't answer that. And so that the witness himself doesn't claim the fifth. And
Here's where it gets fun.
Publicly
testifying or just?
It's a deposition, so no, it's not public testimony.
So you don't really, in that
sort of a deposition situation, you don't really need a lawyer because it's not like the court. It's not like the judge is going to rule on each individual objection. There's going to be a record, and it could, if it goes to court, it can be ruled on by the court at the time.
Yeah, because by its nature,
if it's even just a car wreck deposition, you know, your lawyer can sit there and say, I object. And then the witness has to answer the fucking question.
Yeah.
One way or another. You know, kind of the way that Trump's written answers were all, I don't remember, I don't recollect, I can't recall if I recollect, that kind of shit.
Yeah, and isn't he the one who said he had such great memory?
Yes, perfect memory. Because he's got a very good brain. And he went to all the best schools. But here's where it gets extra double plus good fun. So,
and that's the best kind.
Yeah. So Stephen Boyd of the DOJ sends a letter back to Elijah Cummings saying, "Go fuck yourself." So then maybe he gets held. Then John Gore gets held in contempt of Congress. Well, do you know what has to happen if Congress wants to enforce a contempt citation?
Well, I'm sure it's got to be.
You're not going to like this.
All right, go ahead.
If Congress wants to enforce a contempt citation, they have to send it to the Department of Justice. And then Bill Barr looks at him and says, tell them we declined to prosecute. No matter the great big gaping howling conflict of interest, that's the end of it. That's it. I decline to prosecute. Game over. It's a hell of a catch, that catch 22.
Well, it certainly is, and it's like I'm sure a lot of us saw this coming. The moment Barr was announced as the nominee to replace Jeff Sessions, Trump wasn't bright enough to know anything about Barr to pick him. And I don't even think his 19-page essay, unbidden by anyone, about the feasibility and the appropriateness of in any way challenging executive prerogatives, you know, that didn't play into it. But somebody tugged Trump's sleeve and said ixnay on in picking your next AG, you better damn well pick somebody who can be your Tom Hager.
No, it was done for him. Godfather. It was done for him. You know, the same thugs that were committing, that were behind the commission of war crimes during the W administration, the same thugs that, and look, Bill Barr had already written his audition memo months before. Just to make sure that his name was in consideration.
So,
right. By the way, news of an allegation breaking this evening via a lawsuit. The Giffords Foundation, nonprofit, so named because it was founded by Gabrielle Giffords, who was shot, attempted assassination. They filed a lawsuit against the Federal Election Commission for the Federal Election Commission looking the other way while the NRA, according to the allegations in the lawsuit, gave 9,259 times the legal limit of contributions to Donald Trump.
How many times?
9,259.
Holy fuck.
And of course, let's remember where probably a lot of that donor money came from back in that 2016 election cycle. Hint, they started out as rubles.
No collusion.
And that's that type of support, doesn't that come under the unlimited nature of Citizens United type money? Oh, really? Okay. Jesus.
Plaintiffs' complaints demonstrate that the National Rifle Association violated the Federal Election Campaign Act by using a complex network of shell corporations to unlawfully coordinate expenditures with the campaigns of at least seven candidates for federal office, thereby making millions of dollars of illegal, unreported, and excessive in-kind contributions, including up to $25 million in illegal contributions to now President Donald J. Trump. The problem is, it may get bounced out of court because on the argument that the Federal Election Commission's choice not to take action is discretionary in nature. See, Trump's a goddamn idiot, Scott. But a lot of the people around him aren't, and have spent years finding all the loopholes. And they've found them.
And this goes back to last night's program, which, again, I recommend for anybody who didn't hear Tuesday, the 23rd of April program, to listen to it. And I mean, really listen to it, because there's a lot of stuff being said that will be important now and later. But it goes back, the dynamic at play that you're talking about, they've already got the executive branch of government. And by they, I mean the forces of madness and evil and stupidity, have already got the executive branch. They've already got half of the legislative branch, and they've pretty much, you may as well say, already got the judicial branch, the Supreme Court, and a number of important federal district courts, and who knows who they've got in as federal prosecutors in various sectors of the land. It won't take that much more for them to become fully entrenched in terms of proximity to the levers of power. And the system of our government was designed that if the executive branch wasn't working for you, you could bring your grievances to the legislative branch, or if they weren't working for you, you could take your grievances and your case to the judicial branch. Well, you know, you may as well get big out to lunch signs for the foreseeable future for all three branches of government, because by the time this is over, if they're successful, and by they, I mean the forces of darkness, evil, madness, and stupidity, if they run this thing according to plan, they will have fucked up the machinery of this government by throwing sand and even a few small or major or medium stones into it They will have fucked up our national governmental, our, you know, our founding documents. They would have poured ink on the pages of those documents in the lobby of the archives in the helium filled or whatever inert gas filled chamber designed to fold up on itself and go into an underground vault at the first sign of danger. These are our precious founding documents, people, and it ain't just words on paper, for Christ's sake.
Right, it's not what George W. Bush called a goddamn piece of paper.
Right, it's our. Sometimes I just don't know what to say next. I really, honestly don't. And I know I'm preaching to the choir. I know that you people get it, and Bob gets it, and I get it, and there's millions of Americans who get it. But it's who and what we're up against. You can't slough this one off, people. You've got to take a stand. I envisioned something that someone said last night made me wonder about, let's say we do defeat Trump in 2020 convincingly and irrefutably. Let's say we do keep the House and retake the Senate. Okay. Some people have speculated that even with an outcome like that, Trump is going to try to pull a fast one and not leave the premises. And I got to thinking, you know, sad as it may seem, the first time it was more, it wasn't quite 100 years. It was, what, 87 years ago or thereabouts that our first Civil War occurred. Maybe we need to go to the mattresses on this one in a way. Maybe there needs to be a cleansing that occurs in the land. Maybe we've forgotten how serious it is. And lessons sometimes don't take, as we found in our own Civil War. I would hate to think that it would come to that, but maybe not a full-fledged Civil War. Maybe
there's no such thing as kind of half a civil war. Once you're in one, you're in one.
Well, yeah, that's true. But do you get that sense that maybe?
Well, I know the other side is the other side writes about civil wars with one hand on the keyboard and the other down their pants.
Yeah, I know. And maybe it won't have to come to that. Maybe it won't. Or if we could take, well, God knows, there was a thing on TV last night on PBS called Boss. And it was on PBS. It was like an hour long or half 90 minute documentary about black entrepreneurship and business history in America. And it's on Amazon Prime, and it's probably online on the PBS website in the next day or so. It'll be available to watch for free. And there were parts of it I didn't like, but by and large, I learned a lot about, there was a time in this country when there were black-owned businesses, successful, major company-type businesses. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when we had our head on straight in this country, and people knew that there was a certain way of being in the world that was how we were designed to be, that worked for everybody. Nobody by design, nobody was deliberately left out. If people were left out or by the wayside or weren't quite on an equal footing with someone else, yeah, some of that had to do with oversight that wasn't handled correctly, but some of it had to do with the individual's take that they had really lost any sense that they could make it in America because of the way things, you know, the way things were. But there were people who, in spite of the way things were, made it. And one of the things I didn't like about the documentary is that it framed it in a conversation of it only matters if it's business and some kind of money-making situation. And I don't like that. That's what's gotten us in trouble up till now. It's been, you know, a he who dies with the most toys wins sort of scorekeeping. And there's a higher or deeper, whichever way you look at it, way of thinking of things and behaving and governing and being responsible. I don't know where I was going with that, but check out that documentary. The first word in it is boss. Just put boss PBS and you'll find either that or a documentary about Springsteen. I don't know.
I knew that was going to find its way into the conversation. We don't necessarily come up with answers, but we are seeking a way forward. And I appreciate the goodwill of the conversation, Scott, because, and I'll kind of let this put a bow on all of this. It worries me. And there's no sense in naming anybody. It's not anybody that's a friend of mine or that I care about. But there's a big difference between there are people out there who do this kind of stuff, like this program, who are not, I think, acting in good faith. The only goal is to keep people riled up and hopefully drive them in one ideological direction or another. Now, I make no bones about the fact that I'm a liberal or progressive, Democrat, whatever you want to use, whatever terms you want to use. But I also make clear that the reason I don't vote for Republicans is because never, not once in my entire life, have I met a Republican who shares my values.
Bingo. Bingo, bingo.
Okay. I got a fighting chance that some Democrats will share my values, at least some. But I've never met a Republican who shares any of them. But there are people out there who are doing this kind of work and just trying to keep people in a state of ginned-up hysteria. And I worry about that, because apparently it's a big dollar. But it doesn't lead to anything productive.
And you're apparently not on board with it. Otherwise, you'd be getting some of them big dollars.
Well, it ain't worth it.
No, it's, again, you're at the crossroads. How much of your soul are you going to barter in the process? Come on. Wasn't it Robert Johnson, as legend says, made a deal with the devil, the great blues musician?
I went down to the crossroads and got down on my knees.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I mean it, what I said, Bob, about yesterday's show. Listen, people, if you didn't hear yesterday's show, listen to the whole damn thing, because there is stuff in yesterday's program that's going to give us the roadmap, or if not the roadmap itself, our minds will be filled with information, so that as we continue to sort out the puzzle pieces, working in from the corners, I might suggest, and into the middle of the puzzle of the 5 billion M&Ms on the tabletop, but you can do it. Eventually, you'll get it done. If not the map itself, we have all the elements present to get our mind get ourselves into a mindset where we're thinking in terms of solutions and outcomes that work. What is that thing that I say? Behave in a manner consistent with creating a future that works positively and appropriately for all concerned. There's no flaws in that approach. If you write it down and look at all the words and understand what the words are, behave in a manner consistent with creating a future that works positively and appropriately for all concerned, period. Use that as you're operating, armed with information that's valid and dependable, and we will have that future. It's up to you, people.
Yep.
And me too. So thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Scott. Have a good evening, my friend.
I will. And you go thou and do likewise.
Be determined. Yes. See you, Scott.
Yes. Okay, bye.
Bye now. And I just realized I made a mistake. I left something out of the beginning of the program, and shame on me. And I'm going right back over to the stress line in a moment. But I have thanks to send out to our subscribers, because we have subscribers on the 24th of the month. And thanks go out to Josh and to Samson, to Pam in Washington, and to Jim in Florida. So thank you very kindly, all of you, because our subscribers cover about a quarter of our monthly fundraising needs. Thank you very kindly. And now, having exercised great patience, we go over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia, yet once again. And I would just like to say, I wonder how would people feel, being the radical right-wing conservative Republican hate talkers, how would they feel if their very own Franklin Graham was a closeted homosexual, since he is so, shall we say, psychotically obsessed about the gay people's sex life, you know, gay and lesbian people's sex lives and sexual orientations. What would have happened if he himself came out of the closet?
Well, we have a template for that. Because it has happened.
Yep, it's happened with how many?
A family values marriage between one man and one woman preacher by the name of Ted Haggard?
Ted Haggard. Yeah, I think I've heard of him, yeah.
It's probably about 10 years ago or so. He was a biggin. He was a star already. Nothing rising about. Well, there was something rising about him. But he was a star, and he was in Colorado Springs. Yep. And then he got caught snorting meth off of a hooker's butt. And the hooker was a guy.
Oh, a gay male prostitute, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder.
And they took his church away.
Ooh.
And sent him for some anti-gay conversion therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And last I checked, he's preaching again. And then, now granted, it's not about being gay. But then there's Jimmy Swaggart.
Right. I was just about to bring him up. Go ahead, Bob.
And, you know, him and cousin Jerry Lee Lewis can play the ivories right off of a piano.
What, you mean Mr. I Have Sinned, Jimmy Swaggart?
Yeah, right. He got caught going to see professional sex workers, ladies of the evening, on a rather regular and routine basis, we might add, and stood there on his stage and cried great big crocodile tears and said, I have sinned against you.
Yeah. And what happened to him after that, Bob?
The checks kept clearing.
Oh, man. The check kept clear, even though he sinned.
Yeah, you see, I don't use that phrase all the time, Reggie, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R.
Right.
Just because I've run out of something to say. There is nothing in this country that you can do as a Republican, short of becoming a Democrat,
right,
that most Republicans won't forgive.
Right. Right. That's true.
And so if Franklin Graham was caught in a big old gay daisy chain.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, getting a Cleveland steamer or a rusty right. trombone.
Right.
Don't look it up.
Right.
It'll ruin supper.
Right. Or if he got caught with prostitute.
They would just say, it's, you know, I'm not perfect. Just exactly. saved.
Right. Right.
Ta-da!
He's not perfect, just saved. He won't be. No, but nothing would happen.
Come on, Reggie, man. You live down in Decatur.
Yeah, I do.
That's not exactly a haven of heathen paganism.
Right.
Have you never seen some rusted out, busted up old POS automobile with a bumper sticker that says, and it's got a cross on it, Reggie, it's got a cross. And it says, right. not perfect. Just forgiven. And then on the other side of the rusted bumper, they probably have another bumper sticker that says, my boss is a Jewish carpenter. And see, the one thing you got to remember, and this is a fact, this isn't me guessing at something.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
The critical essential base of the Republican Party, it's not what it used to be.
No, it isn't.
The base of the Republican Party, once upon a time, was businessmen.
Yeah.
You know, men who pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps and built the hardware store down on the town square. Yeah. And you needed them to vote, and your bank presidents and your loan officers, and they're Republicans because they're conservative and they're. They spend all day, every day, just a worrying about the money.
Yeah, unless they were born with money.
But those Republicans are mostly gone.
Yeah.
The base of the Republican Party is now evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, religion industry, Christians.
Yeah.
And they're probably somewhere in the high 20% range of the population of the United States of America.
Right, right.
And so what you got to do is you got to lock them down. You can't have any rebellions or leaving camp. You got to lock them in. So you got to have your Franklin Graham out there hooting away about the gayness of Pete Buttigieg, at the same time that he ignores the five kids by three baby mamas by a fornicatory adulterer who's in the White House. And he gets a pass.
Yeah.
But just because Pete Buttigieg picked out wall sconces with his husband-to-be, well, they're going to burn in the fires of hell.
Right, right.
Because God has him some laws, dang it.
Right. I'm sure Pete Buttigieg is laughing his ass off at Franklin Graham hysterically and comically.
Well, no, he's not. Pete is not. He knows how serious this is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But, you know, why is it that people like Franklin Graham are sticking their nose in everybody else's business, but if you try to stick your nose in their business, they'd be like...
Because they are hypocrites. Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, declared once upon a time, because it's a fairy tale, ye generation of vipers.
Right.
Well, that's Franklin Graham, a member of the generation of vipers.
Right. Started up by his late father, right?
Yeah, Billy. Billy, who made bank doing the dirty work of corporate America preaching against unions.
Yeah. Right. Right. And now I'm sure his son is doing the same thing. Only he's preaching up against gays and lesbians and everybody else. I'm sure he's a racist and a sexist. I don't know about you, but I'm sure he is that. As the days and nights are long, you know, I don't know if he is I'm sure he's a racist and a sexist. Do you, Bob? Because I know he's a homophobe.
Oh, yeah,
possibly a xenophobe. possibly a xenophobe. So why do these, you know, why did they get away with it? Who would challenge them on their hypocrisy? Who would challenge these people on their total utter virtual hypocrisy? Who would stand up to them, Bob?
Well, you really can't. Because he never appears anywhere where anybody can challenge him. If he shows up on the electric TV box, he's by God Franklin fucking Graham, and he appears by himself, and there's never anybody to look at him and say, I've read Jesus, I know Jesus, Jesus is my personal savior, and you are what Jesus called a whited sepulcher. White and pretty on the outside, but full of death and filth and corruption on the inside. Get thee behind me, Satan! No, right. none of the goddamn multimillionaire for-profit media networks are ever going to let that happen. Because it's bad for business.
Why do you say that, Bob?
Putting out the bullshit, both siderism, is just it's the stock in trade of the multimillionaire for-profit media.
Yeah,
I mean Jesus jumping Christ. So a few days ago, Utah senator, the senior senator from Utah now. No, really.
Yeah.
Mike Lee, who holds himself out to be a great scholar of the Constitution, shows up on The View. And the women of The View had him for a snack.
They all had him for a snack?
Well, no, not Meghan McCain. But, yeah, they had him for a mid-morning snack.
Right. Well,
and then he shows up. Then he shows up this morning, on Morning Joe.
Yeah. What did he say to them?
Now, did Joe say, "Hey, Mike, I know you're here to hustle a book, but man, that was an embarrassing load of crap you put forward when you said the answer to climate change was to have more sex and make more babies." Do you really expect anybody to take you seriously when you make arguments like that? Or what about your call for a team of giant fucking seahorses to do transportation from Hawaii to the mainland?
Right.
How are we supposed to take you seriously? Nope. Joe stuck his little nose right up in the brown and stinky place.
What about his wife, Mika?
Oh, Mika was off knowing her value today.
Right. Well, was this guy Mike Lee? Was he drugged? Was he high on something?
No.
When he said that
he's just a 200-proof fucking lunatic.
Right. And you said the women on The View except Meghan McCain counted. I'm sure she sat there quiet.
Oh no, they ate him.
All except Meghan, right?
Well, or yeah. I mean. That goes without saying. You know, Meghan is just a self-absorbed cipher over at the other end of the table. She's comic relief.
Little Miss White Privilege, who throws hissy fits and tantrums when she doesn't get her way or when she thinks they're disrespecting her by not letting her speak her piece, when she constantly out-talks, and out-interrupts all of them, and she's pissed off that Whoopi and Joy and even Sonny Hostin put her in check. I mean, she's the youngest kid at that table. She's the kid. They're the adults. You know, when adults speak, the kids shut their mouths and listen, right? It's like a teacher and a student. When the teacher is speaking, trying to teach you something, you should sit there, shut up, be quiet, and listen and learn, right? Because the adults know more than the kids, right, Bob?
Yeah,
They've been around the world. They've been around the world. She hasn't. I mean, Joy, Whoopi, and even Sonny have done things. Sonny used to be a lawyer or a prosecutor.
Yeah, she was a prosecutor.
She knows everything about the legal law, and how can Meghan correct her on anything about the law when she herself has never even learned it, did it? You know, and do you think that the for-profit, the exact same aforementioned said for-profit media keep Pat Robertson on the air. You know,
I don't. No, a little old lady's social security checks keep Pat Robertson on the air.
Yeah, why don't people go after him?
Because he's untouchable.
Why is he untouchable? He's only human. He's only human. He's, you know, he preaches hate too, you know.
Yeah, but and demon inspired Angora sweaters from the consignment shop too. But right.
Yeah.
But he's untouchable because of because of our fetishized view of free speech.
Right, and remember the late Jerry Falwell's saying about gays and 9/11. After 9/11 happened, he said it was the gays' fault. It was society's fault that 9/11 happened.
Oh yeah, and don't forget, people gay. For the American way, it was their fault too. Right.
Yeah.
Hey Reggie, I got a roll, buddy, but it's good hearing from you. You take care and have a good evening. If you get another nice day down in Decatur, get out and enjoy it. Maybe run out to Piedmont Park and take in the sunshine.
Yeah, it was another beautiful day out there today, Bob. And it's an equal beautiful night too.
I'm looking forward to June getting here and getting down to Malloy Fest and taking my special hillbilly inspired ribs down. I think it's gonna be real tasty.
Right. Well, how's it on your neck on your side of the woods?
Oh, it was supposed to be cloudy and miserable today, and so I didn't plan for anything good. And then there weren't any clouds, and there wasn't any miserable, and it was about 72 degrees, and you couldn't ask for anything better.
So you think the meteorologists were wrong, right? Or they're sometimes wrong? You can't predict what God does, they can't.
Well, no, it ain't God. It's the fact that I live in a what's called a temperate rainforest.
Right.
So we expect to get some rain. I mean, we do 60, 70 inches of rain a year around here, I think. But you know, this time of year, it can be anything. I mean, I'm just hauling up my weather app right now, and it says, it says it's going to be cloudy all night and cloudy all day tomorrow, and got a slight chance of a thunder boomer right at showtime tomorrow night. But for the most part, you know, by tomorrow morning, it may be nothing but sunshine.
Right. I just hope you're right, Bob.
Because the mountains cause the weather fronts to do funny things.
Right. And they say that climate change isn't happening or isn't real.
Oh,
I'm
it is.
About the climate deniers.
Right, yeah.
Well, I'm saying that they're saying that it's not real, and these guys aren't even scientists. Or, you know, what the hell do they know about climate change?
Well, my weather app is just gathering data from the National Weather Service or something and handing it to me, and it's best guess.
Yeah.
Reggie, you have yourself a good night, my friend.
Yeah, you do too, Bob. And you know much more about climate change than anybody else I know, especially them.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I try to keep up with some of it, but some of the science is well past me. But that's the funny thing. I don't have to fully understand all the laws, the law of gravity, to know that if I jump up in the air, my white ass is not going to float away because I am firmly rooted by gravity to the earth.
Right. Same here, Bob.
There's a reason. I'm not a ballet dancer leaping gazelle-like across the stage because I'm supremely susceptible to gravity.
Right.
Reggie, you take care, brother.
Yeah, you do too, Bob. All right. We all, Bob.
Bye now.
We all.
Reggie from Decatur. Reggie is a man of extreme goodwill and sunny outlook. I tell you what, I'm going to knock off a little bit early. I don't know if you can hear this, but my throat is turning into Alex Jones. And it's mostly pollen because I just happened to notice that the little area of my side mirror on the vehicle, the part that's not the color of the car, it's just black plastic. Well, it ain't black anymore. It's kind of a forest green.
That's pollen. And I've been sneezing and hooting and it. And for these 3 hours, I try to keep my voice in, you know, but you can hear it, right? That was a professional broadcast noise, by the way. No, it wasn't. So that's the program. And I think it's been a dandy. I hope you do, too. Do please remember that there's an offer for new subscribers out there. And God knows we need them. Our buddy Tony and Chico will double the first month's subscription for five $10 a month subscribers. So your 10 will become 20 for the first month, just as Tony's way of saying thank you. And Tony's been out there helping to keep this program on the air longer than almost anybody else. And the offer is open through the end of the month, so please take advantage of it. Five people maybe haven't been listening that long. Jump in. Help keep it going. Because believe you me, we're not running this thing as some sort of exercise in capitalism. I can promise you that. And I think Agnes could double promise you that. So thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Hey, Thorn in the Side Thursday tomorrow and something special fun for some portion of the program. We'll be joined by my buddy, our buddy. He's our friend now. Y'all's friend, too. Dan Fisher with some updates and further observations as he moves through life with, you know, his seven-month-old new heart. So check that out. Join in. He'll be coming in about the second hour of the program. Anyway, y'all have a wonderful evening, or morning, or day, or afternoon, or whenever it is you're listening to the program. Later, y'all.